Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. So just to explain what's going on here, those of you who were lurking on Survivor Sucks a few years ago may know the screen name QuackRabbit, and those of you who understandably were not lurking on Sucks back then will have missed what, in my view, was and is by far the best written Survivor content out there, and I'll link that in the show notes so you can all judge for yourselves. I've been very keen to talk to him in some capacity for a long time, and I finally got to do that here. So was very excited for all of that, and we had a very wide-ranging conversation, which, if you're familiar with us and what we do on this show, you will not be shocked to learn that that went on for quite a long time. So instead of throwing another four-hour block of audio in your direction, I've broken that up into three episodes, and I've divided those up by topic, so you can decide for yourself which parts might interest you. So it may jump around, some of the transitions may be abrupt, but this felt like the best way to organize everything. So in this episode, we'll talk about what draws certain people to reality TV, and to Survivor in particular, as well as the experience of writing about the show, and the nature of the show's internet fan base and how to cope with it, both as a writer and as a human being who values their own sanity. And then in the second episode, we talk about storytelling on Survivor and how that's changed in tandem with the game itself. And the third part is more of a freeform discussion of the show's general evolution, as well as character studies in varying levels of depth of some of the lovable psychos who have graced our screens over the years. And as a treat at the end, you get maybe the hottest co-wrong take since February 2016. So I'll send you over to all that in a second, and I'll get the plugs out of the way quickly here. So you can find QuackRabbit, aka Taylor, on Twitter at HeartDeco. You can find me on Twitter at DomHRV. You can email us, as always, at domandcolin@gmail.com. And find all of our bonus content, including the current in-depth Heroes vs. Villains Free Watch series, at patreon.com/domandcolin. But for now, you can find the first part of this this marathon, I think is fair to call it, right here. So enjoy, and I'll talk to you later.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having me. I actually have not used the Survivor part of my brain for a little while, I guess including the entire time that Ghost Island was on the air. So I am excited to access those long buried thoughts and passions and whatever. So yeah, thanks for the invite.
Yeah, some would say you're not missing too much there, but there's more than enough historical Survivor to analyze here. So I guess the place we usually like to start is just with some kind of backstory. So for Survivor contestants, there's some kind of casting process or whatever. But sure. With you as a fan, I guess that would be how you got into Survivor and reality TV as a genre, and then how you applied your kind of literary mind to it, I suppose.
Sure. To be clear, I did in fact watch Ghost Island. I just didn't use my brain during it. It was like put it on in the background, and every now and then I'd pop over and, you know, Kellen would have a new advantage and I'd be like, good for her, and I'd forget about it in the next week and she'd pull it out and I'd be like, oh, you had a thing, hey. I got into Survivor. Actually, I'm one of those unicorns who actually watched from the first episode. How old was I? It was 2000. Okay, so I would have been like 9, 10 years old, 11, something like that. And it was very thoroughly covered in the like supermarket tabloid rags that my parents would always buy from the checkout line. And I thought, oh, this seems like a cool show. Why not? And we would watch it. And it was very much that time of like appointment television, pre-PVR, pre-watching things on the internet. And I got really swept up in it the same way that kind of everybody got swept up in it around that time. And so I remember like being really excited to watch the premiere. I watched it. I watched Sonia get done. I watched BB get done, and kind of it just really captured something in me. I don't know. To this day, I'm not quite sure what was so engaging about the initial concept, except that it was surprisingly daring for its time, which I guess is funny to say now that it's like 36 seasons in and it's more a game almost of like mathematics and advantages and fairly stripped down narratives. But at the time, the interactions between these people and the there was just something about the a sort of predictable unpredictability about it, because like you knew watching it like, oh, Ramona's not getting along with her tribe, Ramona's done, but it felt alive regardless because this wasn't something we'd seen before and there weren't alliances and there wasn't anything like that. So it kind of felt like anyone could get done at any time. And then of course there's this great narrative to the first season of Survivor that I'll evangelize all over the place that where the alliance is formed, and you see people like Richard, who are very Machiavellian in the way they approach it, versus people like Kelly, who had these like personal struggles around it, but couldn't bring herself to not be ensconced in this alliance because she was fundamentally, she knew what was best for her, but she couldn't bring herself to, you know what I mean? It was this internal conflict that she had. And then there's people like Sean who were just like, all right, cowards. There's just something about the story of the people involved that was very engrossing to me. And that kind of remains what is interesting about reality TV to me, is that there are these like narrativized, intensely human characters who interact with each other in these, you know, situation specific ways that I still find really gripping to this day.
And that's an issue that we struggle with week to week. It seems to be much easier to deconstruct some aspect of the show in minute detail than it is to articulate that kind of ineffable aspect of the show that sparked that original interest. So I can spend hours a week talking about the show, but I couldn't really articulate well for you why exactly I do that.
No, it's like an interesting compulsion, and I don't know what it is that like, it's easy enough to say, oh, well, these are real people, which is what makes it interesting above and beyond a scripted narrative. But these are real people in like a highly unreal, overtly produced situation, right? Who are, depending on whether you're agnostic on the Stacey Stillman lawsuit or not, like these are people who were guided in a specific way. So like, it's very pure and noble and kind to say, well, these were just people left to their own devices and this is what they did. But of course, you, I imagine, as someone who is well versed in the mechanics of reality television just by virtue of doing what you do, you know that they're guided along in certain ways, however tangible. And so that isn't an entirely satisfactory answer to say, well, it's real people doing whatever they want. So I still can't quite grasp it, like you say.
Absolutely. So there are lots of fans of the show who love the show for their own reasons, but there are very few people who are writing about the show, and especially in the kind of long form content that you've done. So can you give us some of your literary background and what drove that to coincide with your interest in reality TV?
Sure. I mean, my literary background is I actually have studied writing. I have a master's degree in creative writing. I'm sure that that's helped the writing that I do about reality television and stuff like that, but I still think that I would feel compelled to write about it regardless of whether I had that kind of more formal literary training or not, because I think that it's something that I invest a lot of my, as embarrassing as, it's not embarrassing to say to you, you're the same, but it's something that I invest a lot of my time into just watching it. And I'm the kind of person who, when I'm uptaking something in large volume, even as a hobby, whether it's reality TV or anything else that I'm interested in, I am a pretty opinionated person, and I am the kind of person who, it's not enough for me to have an opinion. It's not enough for me to watch Australian Outback and be like, Colby sucks. I have to be like, okay, I think Colby sucks. Why do I think Colby sucks? And it's sort of like piecing that out and being like, okay, he's an asshole to Jerry. Am I allowed to swear, by the way?
As much as you want and as vigorously as you like.
Beautiful. I was raised by wolves, so you will probably have a lot of that coming. Colby was an asshole to Jerry, but because of who he is, because of the way that he presents himself, and because of the way that the show presents him, he has a lot more leeway to be a fairly moody, cynical, you know, obviously this is just my personal opinion, but like, he embodies certain qualities that I find objectionable, whereas Jerry obviously embodies a lot of qualities that a lot of people would find objectionable, but she gets stick and he doesn't. And so why do I feel this way and other people feel a different way? And sort of just kind of examining that tension and putting it into words, I think, is maybe why I do the long form writing that I do.
Right. And there's no formal qualification needed, really. There's no gatekeeping when it comes to expressing your opinions about the show, or at least I shouldn't be. Like, you can argue whether you need to have played or have been behind the scenes in some capacity to gain a full understanding of various aspects. But as a fan, you're on an equal playing field. There's nothing to really distinguish you from someone who watched since episode one of season one versus someone who got into the show more recently and maybe isn't fully up to date on the history, but is taking an avid interest and learning what they can.
100%. And I guess the qualification that I would make is when I come in and I criticize someone like Colby, for example, I don't know this dude as a person, and I can't know this dude as a person. I know the way that he fit into three stories that were heavily edited and narrativized by three different groups of people over a period of, 10 years? So I can say what I want about Colby, the character, as he appears on the show, but I can't sit there and be like, oh, I know for a fact that Colby Donaldson, the man, is this, 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 and this, because I don't know the guy. And I think that that's something that I'm really conscious of when I'm writing my stuff, and I'm often reads back some of the stuff that I've written and be like, man, you were harsh there, because like, I don't know for a fact that no one is ever going to read what I've written about them. And if you take a really hard line on someone, and sometimes I'm the asshole, right? So I it's something that I try to be mindful of. But with that said, like you say, I'm writing as a person who has not any insider knowledge more than the average person, but is consuming this show as a fan and a viewer and someone who enjoys this particular kind of narrative. And that doesn't make me better or worse than anyone. It just makes me someone with a certain set of opinions. And if you like that, great. And if you don't like that, you can, you know, send me all kinds of hate mail, and people have. So it's chill.
Well, the entire basis of reality TV, as far as I can tell, is you're allowed to be an asshole as long as you're entertaining. And you seem to be doing well on that front. So I imagine there will be a lot to be said about what it means to try and separate like a text from a character within a text on like an abstract level. But I think that disclaimer is something which we take for granted and try to make explicit sometimes, that the Survivor online fan base, at least, and I'm not saying it's necessarily better or worse than other fan bases, can trend heavily negative at times, and you see a lot of hatred being shoveled towards people who are people in real life and really don't deserve that kind of judgment anyway, but based on some narrowly construed portrayal, someone has decided to take a lot of offense, and that blows up into something it really shouldn't do.
And I think that, like, obviously, like, social media has maybe exacerbated that a bit, because now people are accessible, right? And they're posting as the show goes on. And if you think that, you know, Dawn Meehan is a paranoid psycho, which she is, but I love her for it. I think she's, if you ever want to have the Dawn Meehan talk,
oh, we do. Dawn Meehan, yeah, absolutely.
I am edging at the thought.
I think we should save that for later, because if we get into it now, nothing else will surface in the discussion. So yeah,
it would be the Dawn cast, which is a great idea and which should be your next spinoff. But like, obviously, the point is, like, if you feel a certain way about her, you can, if you're, you know, a real piece of shit, you can go on Twitter and be like, at Dawn Meehan, listen, you fucking jerk, da 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 da, and I don't think that that's an advisable course of action, because these are people trying to live their lives. They were characters. There's this killer quote from Kelly Wigglesworth when she's on like her shitty having a Bud Light with Jeff Probst reward in the first season, and she's coming to grips with all the blood on her hands, and they're in this like fake Malaysian bar with peanut shells on the ground talking, and she says something like, we're not bad people, we just play them on TV. And I think that that's like, yeah, they went out there, whoever it is, went out there and did some things, and I'm not saying that there are things that are like, I'm not saying that you get a free pass on everything you did on TV because you were in an unnatural situation, e.g., some of the shit that like someone like Colton Cumby did in One World, I don't give a pass on that, because I'm like, it's symptomatic of a certain worldview that like, I feel, I don't profess to know the man, but I feel comfortable criticizing the things that he said in this context on this television, because I'm like, I don't think there's actually that much room for interpretation there. However, when it just comes down to like someone behaving in game in some way that you don't like, or they did a strategy you wouldn't do, or someone like Laura on Ghost Island or something, where you're just like, oh, she was so passive, how did she let those guys win? That's not something worth going to Twitter and being like, at Laurel, you suck. So, you know, right. Get it together.
Let's talk about where those discussions take place quickly, because correct me if I'm wrong here, but you are an old school Suxer. Is that right?
I was. I've always had my problem with Sucks, and I have always just posted there because there was a certain coterie of like-minded individual. And I don't mean like-minded in that we had the same opinions or anything. I mean like-minded in that we kind of approached the show in the same way with the same analytic lens. And so it was like a good audience, and there were other people there who were similarly creating good content that I enjoyed reading and interacting with. I wouldn't and don't post there now, not only because it has sort of degenerated into a pit of like MAGA goo, but it also, they switched over to a new like forum hosting place, and it just looks like ass. Like, you can barely read anything there. So I don't post there anymore, but I did, and I feel like a lot of the writing that you would know of mine would have been there, yeah.
Yeah, there has got to be a good, like, 99% invisible podcast in the works about how forum design, like, determines the tone of the content that goes
it
on
there.
It
changes everything.
Yeah. I'm not remotely qualified to discuss that, but I want to hear about it if there's anyone out there who happens to know about that somehow. Not even sure how you would, but regardless. but Sucks was, for a long time, it was the place to talk about Survivor on the internet. And I don't just mean it was the hit place that you go to. It was literally the only place, other than kind of very niche discussion forums in their own cloisters somewhere on the internet. So that was where a lot of the discussion happened. And it was known, understandably, for being a very toxic place. And I think that reputation obscured the club's sub-problem that you alluded to, which was also quite toxic in its own way at times.
Yeah, and it had, I'm not sitting here like unambiguously evangelizing clubs. That place could give you like an ulcer if you hung out there too long. But there were also people who had like a serious gift for writing stuff, and that was where they chose to post, and those people sort of attracted me to post there, and that's kind of where and why I started posting things, right? So
yeah, it was definitely a mixed bag, and every new page of a thread was an adventure, because you would have some very detailed and in-depth analysis combined with just unnecessary hatred being spewed at random people, including each other, so you had to take the good with the bad, but that was the only place where that kind of writing was taking place. And I bring this up because in the modern kind of fanscape, if you like, you have all of these different discussion forums where those talks are happening. So you can listen to 30 hours of podcasts a week if you want to. Every Survivor contestant who's been on the show has their own podcast these days. You can go on
I like Brianna Varela's podcast is the best
It's Liliana Gomez's too. It's a real hit for me. So you have that. You have the Survivor subreddit and all of its various offshoots. You have blogs, I guess, but less so nowadays. They aren't really recognized as a medium as such.
Which is a shame. I love long-form writing. This is actually the first podcast anything I've ever done about Survivor, and it's because I feel like a good piece of long-form work is a little bit of a lost art, and I'm more eloquent on paper than I am just speaking to a person like I'm speaking to you, so I apologize in advance if I, like, am tripping over my tongue at any point.
Well, no, as always with most of our guests, you're better on your first appearance than I am after 6.5 years of practice now, but I think each of those media has their own limitations in terms of how you can talk about things in general and maybe Survivor specifically. So with podcasts, firstly, it's just a big demand on your time, and there's a lot of competition out there. But then also, I think the conversational format makes it difficult to go in depth on things. So I know that, like, when we discuss strategy, sometimes we have to, like, reiterate certain basic just numerical facts over and over again, because otherwise we and people listening are just going to get lost in the shuffle somewhere.
I understand.
And likewise with any of these long form articles or essays, you need a certain kind of overall voice, and I think that's hard to capture over the course of a long podcast. I can't immediately reference something that you said 2 paragraphs ago versus 20 minutes ago, where it's difficult to find an exact timestamp, right?
Yeah, no, I understand. I got you.
And then with other written media like Reddit, for instance, with Reddit, you do find some good discussion sometimes, but it's buried under 90% of white noise and worse, and it's hard to kind of find the needles in the haystack sometimes, and just the structure of the site is god awful, and it's hard to really carry on a good discussion there.
I find that, like, with Reddit, and I have, like, a real mixed relationship with Reddit in general, because there's I post on Reddit and whatever, but I have never been in any sub forum that I haven't eventually found frustrating there. And I think that a lot of that comes down to not only, like, any forum develops its own culture that can be, like, kind of vexing and whatever, but it's more just that I feel like the format encourages the same 8 questions, thoughts, ideas to be reposted over and over and over.
And you have to sift through those to get to whatever it is you wanted to look at in the first place. And it's hard as well, because it's hard to find subreddits which are large enough that you have good discussion with a wide range of posters on a consistent basis, while also not being so large that they just get swamped and all of that just gets lost in the shuffle somewhere. And I find myself reading subreddits for various interests that I have, because not because it's a good haven of content, but because that's the only real like aggregation that people actually look at.
Yeah.
And then blogs have kind of died down, and I think they are maybe the best suited to the kind of analysis that that you're known for. But I think with blogs, there's this expectation of constant updates, and of like it's very easy to see a blog that hasn't been updated since mid 2015 and assume that the person behind it no longer has anything relevant to say, or that the past archives aren't worth delving into. Whereas with forum threads, I think you, even though it's very old school, I think it has stood the test of time in that you have this back and forth. If it's your thread, if the social norms work that way, you can update as and when. And even on Sucks, which is a wild beast at times, I think you in particular did a good job at kind of cultivating a healthy discussion within your own area of that.
Thank you. That's the nicest thing anyone's ever said to me.
Also the nicest thing anyone said about Sucks, probably. But
you know, for I am happy to be the flower that grew in a pot of dirt.
But did you find yourself having to consciously try and foster a certain kind of environment for that? Or what?
100%.
Or was it more a case of, I'm going to put myself out there and hopefully the tone will just align with the general discussion there?
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, but like both. It was just, it was kind of one of those things where, it was kind of one of those things where anytime I created a thread or whatever, I would take very seriously my duties as like a pseudo moderator of that thread and be like, okay, I'm setting the tone here. Like if I did this one that was like a season ranking, that ended up going pretty well because I feel like everyone like really embraced the format, and there was a lot of like really chill, high level kind of literary discussion about the seasons that with like a bunch of seriously smart people. I really was enthused to check that thread and see the discussion, and I felt very good about it. But then like there would be like one or two people there where they would just be shitheads and they would just like be like beaking you off and being like, oh, well, why the fuck didn't you eliminate All Stars already? You're a fucking waste man. And you'd be like, it is taking every angel on my shoulder right now not to just like tell you exactly what I think of you. And then sometimes I would, but the key to dealing with that sort of toxic forum environment, Dominic, is you have to hold off on those. You got to hold off on the nuke button long enough that everyone's convinced that you're like a chill and righteous person. And then when you do hit that nuke button, then everyone, it's like being, if you're the nice parent long enough, when you chew someone out, they take you more seriously and they go to their room. So that was kind of what it was.
So life lessons here, as well as literary analysis. But
I can tell you all about how to best interact on this like dying, terrible web forum that you should not be going to anyway.
You're already a better parenting guide than Lisa Welchel, as far as I understand. But
oh, I felt that one. That was a cold slap. Hashtag survivor breakdown.
Yeah, we don't need to read that necessarily, but what do you hope to accomplish in your writing, if that's even a sensible question to ask? Like what is the motivation behind it?
Honestly, to have fun, to connect with like-minded people. There's just some itch in me, and I do like all different kinds of writing. I write fiction, I have written plays, so I'm just someone who writes kind of by nature, and I like to dabble in different formats to just kind of scratch a certain itch. And I think that engaging in, you know, Survivor or Big Brother or Real Housewives or whatever it is, I'm the kind of person who like, I have hobbies and I love my hobbies and I'm very passionate about my hobbies, as square as that makes me sound. And I want to interact with other people based on those hobbies, and my way of doing that and knowing how to do that is me being like, this is what I think, and if you think that I'm full of shit, then that's a dialogue we can have. And if you really agree but you haven't been able to put it into words before, then hopefully I touched on something that you felt, and you know, whatever.
So is it mainly a case of refining your own views on things and exploring those by putting them out there into the universe, or are you trying to have those be challenged as well by other people who might come across your writing?
For sure. I mean, that's definitely like a big part of it. And I'm the kind of person where I've had my opinion change. Like sometimes I'll just like ask a rhetorical question where like, what's a good example? Where I'll just be like, oh, I've never, would someone who is a big fan of Michael Scoopin's game in Philippines, explain it to me and then maybe I'll get it. You know what I mean? Like something like just dumb stuff like that. And then occasionally someone will, and I'll be like, oh, okay, yeah, I get it. I still think that whoever should have won, but I get where you're coming from, blah, blah, blah. So it like people do change my mind. I'm not just out here being like, this is what I think. I'm also like, maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree here, in which case put it to me in some way that I haven't heard before and maybe I'll come around.
Well, what does that writing process look like for you? Is it just a stream of consciousness that you then maybe clean up a little bit afterwards, or is it done with a certain I was going to say is it done with a certain structure in mind, but I guess that answers itself.
You figure the structure out as you write it. Like you just kind of I find this kind of stuff fairly easy to write, and there's always the beautiful thing about the Clubs That Suck era of Survivor Sex was that everyone and their dog decided that they needed to express their opinions on things in the form of rankings. And that's actually, in general, if you're the kind of person who is able to itemize the way that you feel about things, it's actually a pretty handy format to do things in, because it gives you the devoted space. Like say you do your rank in all the seasons or whatever, it gives you the devoted space to talk about one season at a time, which is a very manageable way to do it instead of jumping all over the place. It serializes itself, right? And I was always the kind of person who I was always very conscious that something that I wrote would never get finished. So I would always finish everything before I even started posting it.
And you can see as those threads continue, the ones that do finish, there's a lot of mounting discussion towards the end of trying to like get in the OP's head almost of how are they going to finish the ranking? What are their priorities? How do they conflict with mine? Does that kind of help to build the community around your writing, or does it detract from the focus where if you have some random person coming in and arguing that actually this season belongs in 14th instead of 15th, that's not the point. That the overall message is meant to be the content and not the itemized list, I suppose.
It can be frustrating, honestly, I think, because there's a subset of person where if they like you as a writer and they like the way that you express your opinions, or they think you're funny, or they like the cut of your jib in some way, but they don't agree with the way that you've put things. Like someone who thinks I'm funny. Okay, so when I did this season ranking that I did, the big bugbear was that I put Karamoan somewhere in the mid-teens. There was like 30 seasons at the time. I put Karamoan outside of the bottom 10. And this is a season that a lot of people have a stick up their ass about.
You will have to justify that, but you have time. So continue for now.
Oh, don't worry. It's Dawn. It's all Dawn. The answer is Dawn. Anyway.
As it usually is.
As it is in all things when you're contemplating the big mysteries of life. But people can take it personally, which is a strange thing to think. But they see the way that you've put it, and if you are making a persuasive case, they see other people agreeing with you, and they think, am I crazy? You know what I mean? Like, I don't see this the way that this person whose writing I like sees it. Like, what's the disconnect here? Which doesn't sound like it should be something like, and this, it's going to sound like I'm way up my own ass here, and I don't mean it. I don't think I'm objectively right in any way. But the thing is, there were plenty of people who can interact with a thread like that very like rationally and be like, okay, this dude has Caramone at 16 or 17 or wherever I put it. But that's a weird anomaly in his taste where he's totally full of shit. And I have no problem with that because I don't expect everyone to like the things that I like. But there can be people who, like you say, need to come in and actually be like, well, actually, you should feel this way. And then I'm like, well, get fucked.
Yeah. I guess that offers up a larger question of to what extent does any work like that imply that you either have confidence in your own beliefs or think that you are right? Because you're not just... When you're ranking seasons, you're not just using like a bingo ball to spit out numbers. You have a ranking in mind based on criteria, and you've determined for whatever reasons that those are the ideal criteria, and that based on those criteria, these are the correct rankings. And that seems to be implicit in almost any content creation, if you like.
Sure. I mean, the opposite for me, actually, because I am so conscious of not saying that my criteria are the ideal criteria, to the point where, like, a lot of the time I am not even necessarily evaluating all things in the same criteria. I'm just going with some sort of gestalt, like, on a gut feeling, does watching this one bring me more joy than the next one, right? But I try to be very upfront about that. Like, I try to be, when people will challenge me on why is this person or place or thing this high versus this high, I'll be like, well, a lot of it has to come down to my own personal idiosyncrasies. I like this mystery that's set on a train because I like mysteries that are set on trains. You know what I mean? Yeah. And maybe you don't give a shit about mysteries that are set on trains. I like mysteries that are set on trains. I read a lot of Agatha Christie growing up. That's me. You didn't. You don't care. Maybe I like, people will say, like, you like Borneo as much as you do as purely a nostalgia thing. And I'll be like, well, I don't think it's entirely a nostalgia thing because X, Y, Z, here are my reasons. And I try to lay out the best articulated case that I can. Does the experience of having watched Borneo as it aired and the sort of cultural hullabaloo around it, does that inform the way that I interact with the season? Yeah, probably. Might it not if you watched it, you know, 15 years later on demand? Yeah, very well. You could just be like, who are these dry people in hemp chokers and wraparound sunglasses and why should I give a fuck? Fair enough.
Yeah, it can be fun to a point to read rankings or just analysis for shows or topics that you have no knowledge of yourself and where the content just is like a foreign language to you, just to see how they approach a task of articulating their own fandom in the form of some like extended spreadsheet or something like that.
100%.
Yeah. So in your writing, I guess you can try to, as you said, everybody on Sucks has a ranking thread. When you try to distinguish yourself from the pack or kind of make a name for yourself, is that just via the content or is it via a distinct like authorial voice that you develop over time?
I never thought that far into it. Like I never, that's not the kind of thing that I'm necessarily conscious of.
I don't mean as like a social strategy to distinguish yourself from the pack or whatever, but just...
What are you accusing me of?
I figure being able to navigate the social politics of clubs is an achievement in itself, or was at least. but I mean more that when you write, I guess you're trying to leave like your own watermark on it, if you like. You're trying to... Sure. If I read one of your pieces, I can say, okay, this is probably by Taylor, and I think that's a good thing to have, but is that something which you have to work towards, or is it just I have a distinct way of expressing myself, and so that's going to come through naturally?
I think for me, it's kind of the latter. I have a way that I think about things in a way that I phrase things when I'm pouring them out of my head onto the fake paper that is the computer screen. But I also maybe underestimate how long I've been doing that because like I've done a Celebrity Big Brother one. I've done a couple of Survivor ones. I've done a fucking Nancy Drew video game one. I've done a Real Housewives one. So like I've been at the, I've had a couple of kicks at the can. So maybe it's just having done it. And I kind of know what that kind of project requires and kind of can come fairly naturally to me. I don't know.
Yeah. Does that go hand in hand with the writing process too? Because if you're following some explicit structure, well, that's probably a recognizable structure that has been used and honed in the past to guide people in their writing. Whereas if it's just a stream of consciousness onto the page, that's coming from you and your own kind of unique stance or mode of expression, if you like.
I mean, I don't know. That's hard because I can't read my own writing with an objective eye, right? Like I know it's just thoughts in my head kind of that I've arranged in a particular way. And so I don't necessarily know what it would that would distinguish me from someone else who is writing the same content. I think I have a certain less than maybe the way that I'm writing. I think I have a certain way of approaching people and approaching the characters and the themes of a piece of television that maybe some people respond to. I think I'm funny. That helps. I think that I'm, I don't know. I think it's more to do with, less to do with any kind of writing parlor trick that I've got in my grab bag, and more to do with just the way that I'm approaching the media that I guess maybe some people are vibing with. And again, I need to check my humility. Maybe not everyone's vibing with it. So, you know, whatever.
I imagine as someone who has been around a lot of writers in your time, it's often difficult for them to describe their own voice as an author. Like, if you had them give an elevator pitch for like who they are,
you can't count on writers to fucking talk about themselves for a second. It's the most asinine quality that like nearly every writer, and it's, I'm actually on, I feel like, the better end of the writers that I know in terms of being able to detail, like, okay, I write, you know, high concept magic realism about blah 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 blah, and you know, all my fucking characters are sad and hate themselves, whatever it is. And I feel like in general, writers as a breed are, like, you see being able to be self-aware about your work and describe it succinctly as some kind of, like, arrogance or self-promotion or something like that. And but I'm also talking in, like, a Canadian context, too. I think that writers are different depending on where you are.
Well, not to get too bogged down on that even further, but can you elaborate on that quickly?
Sure. I think that in general, and I am speaking as a Canadian, so I'm allowed, I think that Canadian artists are more inclined toward self-effacement or self-doubt than maybe American writers, or, and I'm mostly just talking about the difference between Canada and America, yeah, because those are the two.
Story checks out there in a big way, but as someone who is planning to become Canadian in this calendar year, is it...
Oh, where are you going?
Well, I don't know yet. This is, I guess you can make a case here, but is it also a regional thing? Like, are there, like, Vancouver writers versus Toronto writers, or is it that granular?
Yeah, kinda. I mean, there's, like, a low-key, so I'm from Vancouver, and there's, I feel like, low-key, the Vancouver writing scene is, I think, maybe seen as maybe a bit more small potatoes. Like, we don't really exist to Toronto, as far as I can tell. But there's also the case that, like, there's this ingrained resentment of the West Coast toward the East Coast for the reason that we feel like, oh, you literally don't fucking spare us a thought. Meanwhile, like, all of the, many, I shouldn't say all, but many of the publishers are in Toronto, da-da-da-da-da. And then, obviously, Montreal is its whole different other kettle of fish when it comes to the arts and stuff like that. Yeah. And then if you're not in any of those three cities, it's a completely different experience as well. So I would say that, yeah, from region to region, it really depends where you are. Not even just in terms of, like, something like humility or approach to work, but just in terms of, like, the way that you perceive your role in Canada's literary ecosystem.
Okay.
And that's how I feel about Survivor.
So that's a good rabbit hole for another time, maybe. But we've somehow spent 40 minutes just talking about the art of writing, about Survivor. Jesus. And at some point, we should talk about Survivor itself. So
yeah, I'm ready.
Before we do that quickly, let's just meditate briefly on that internet subculture. Because as a writer occupying a certain niche, you're not just selecting for the online Survivor fan base, which already has its own kind of shape to it, but it's the people who are willing to visit a specific sub forum on a specific site, which has its own reputation, and then seek out a type of writing which I think, by virtue of being highbrow, is not going to be a kind of mass market thing.
You think I'm highbrow? That's nice. Thank you.
I guess so.
I'll do the rest of this podcast with my pinky out.
I like to think of myself as a highbrow reader. Maybe it's egotistical. But what do you make of the way that the fan base as a whole has evolved over time, and how the demographics of that, for lack of a better word, have informed the analysis that it outputs?
Without profiling, I think it's not immaterial that Clubs That Suck was predominantly gay. And something like, I feel like, and maybe I'm like way off on the demos here, but I feel like the Survivor subreddit is predominantly straight dudes. And I feel like that is not an immaterial consideration when you're talking about the way that a certain group of people interacts with the show, right? Because I feel like you can see it in they did a poll on the subreddit a while ago, I want to say it was pre Game Changers. and it was, who do you most want to return to this show? And the winner of that poll was David Wright. And that ain't happening on Clubs.
No.
Clubs is like Gandia. You know what I mean? So it changes depending on what niche you're in, it changes my answer to the question, because the Survivor subreddit versus a place like Clubs versus like a place like Twitter, which is like a huge tent of all different kinds of people who have direct access to the players. And if you're feeling a certain way about something that Jeff Probst said on the show, you can like subtweet him right now. It used to be that you were talking in a small enclave, and like you say, it was the case that if someone wanted to seek out your stuff, then that was a person that you could have a conversation with. Now you have your choice of venue, which I think changes the conversation, and the conversation is drastically different on the Survivor subreddit, where it's funny, they can be equally fickle as a place like Clubs or a place like Twitter, just in their own way and about different things. It's real different there than if you're talking on like the Survivor CBS Facebook wall and everyone's being like, I think that Joe and Ozzy should win every season, bring them back right now. Like, it's a different, you know?
Yeah, it's
a different app.
It's interesting to see those worlds collide sometimes. Like if someone from the subreddit stumbles onto Sucks and suddenly they're seeing like Michael Yerger being hyper aggressively sexualized in a way that they have never seen like a male TV star that happened to them before.
Sure.
In a way that maybe they've become desensitized to for female contestants. That's often True. Like a not a like a wake up moment for them, but it kind of, it's a jolt to the system at least, and it forces them to kind of reconsider various assumptions. But I know that like Sucks, for instance, justified its toxicity for a long time on the grounds of like, well, we're doing our own thing, you know what we're about, and don't invite yourself into our house and then criticize the decor, right? Whereas Twitter, I think, is seen at times as more of a public forum, for better or for worse, and that perception itself is important too, I think.
If you are the kind of online community member who wants to create a certain space for a certain kind of discussion, which, in like you say, in a lot of the ways is the ways that I approach like the threads that I would make or whatever, you try to be the change that you want to see in the world. But I've never been anywhere that was like perfect, or honestly even like 50% good. Like you get people in large amounts online, and they it's literally just monkeys flinging shit at each other at a certain point. What can you do?
But it's been a long-standing observation, I think, that the Survivor and I guess reality TV at large has a large queer following, more so than a lot of other TV subgenres. And I don't know if that's specifically a queer male thing, or like disproportionately.
I
guess maybe those are just the voices you hear a bit more often. But do you have any ideas as to why that is, if in fact it's true, which it may not be?
I have theories. I mean, without getting super deep into the literature, there was for a long time. Okay, so I'm about to, like, in my head, I'm, like, trying not to go all the way back to, like, the celluloid closet here, but, like, the ways in which queer people were depicted in film, let's say film and television, the ways in which queer people were depicted in film and television were very prescriptive, primarily dictated and written by, I don't know that I should say that they were primarily dictated and written by heterosexuals, because I don't know that for a fact. I don't know the numbers. But at some point, the filter was that they would go through a straight person. And so you'd get a lot of things like, at first, you've got your sneaky gay villains who are not necessarily explicitly termed gay, but are coded as such, because you couldn't be outright gay back in the day unless you were doing like plays. Plays is kind of a different story, but... So you've got that, and then at a certain point, the AIDS epidemic comes in the 80s, early 90s, and then you get a lot of, like, for gay men, you get a lot of, like, tragic victims, etc. And then if you are a lesbian or a trans person, you've got a lot of, like, psycho killers and shit, like, people who are confused and dangerous, and if they're a lesbian, they're Superman-hating, and, you know, shit like that. And to some extent, if you look at someone like Richard Hatch, and for all the in Borneo, and in all the flaws in the way that he was portrayed, and I obviously know that there were like other queer people depicted on reality television. If you go back to like The Real World, and even further back, the show American Family, which had like a queer male character in it, but just to kind of limit myself to Survivor, because I feel like the turn of the millennium in Survivor was like earnestly the boom of, you know, it was when you would start getting shows like Joe Millionaire that would do 43 million people at the finale, right? And I feel like maybe there was some sense that these characters, because they were quote unquote real people, were more real and more authentic. Well, they didn't necessarily play into more or less stereotypes, because at the end of the day, you still get someone like Richard, who's portrayed as like kind of sneaky, ambiguously evil, potentially sexually deviant, because he's walking around flashing his dong all the time. You get a lot of commentary from people like Rudy and Sean that is sort of, you know, affirmative of certain views on queer people and gay men and whatever. He also was a fleshed out character in this narrative in his own right, a very prominent character who won the show, right? And so I feel like there's maybe a certain element of that. I would say, even at the turn of the millennium, when when queer, quote unquote, queer representation is happening on TV, it's gay white men, basically, right? Like, Sonia was a lesbian, but we didn't know that then. It took how long for Survivor to have its first out lesbian on the show? I think, like, Vanuatu, maybe. It took until Zeke for there to be a transgender person on the show, and that wasn't something that was going to be discussed. That was something that came up because Jeff Varner ran his fucking mouth, right? So it's not, I'm speaking, when I'm talking about this sort of quote-unquote revolution around the depiction of queer people on reality TV, I'm mostly talking about, like, white gay dudes, and so to acknowledge that. But I also have a theory, this is on the complete flip side of that, I also have this theory that, and it's the same reason that I think a lot of particularly gay men are into horror movies. I think we are fascinated by gradual elimination. And I don't know what that is. I've never been able to account for that. But I think that anything you're setting up where people are getting knocked off one by one, that's like catnip to every gay kid I've ever known. And I can't account for it.
It's one of those things which maybe you observe it often enough that you can't help but notice it. But then trying to offer any kind of explanation is going to just fall at the first hurdle, because it's going to sound contrived no matter what it is.
I would be pulling shit out of my ass, but it's completely a thing. It's 100% a thing. You fucking put any do you know what movie I have had on in the background?
Is it The Circle?
It is Circle. I've watched that movie in the background four fucking times. I wouldn't call it a good film. I think that it's like anytime it does like we should get rid of her because she's lesbian, we should get rid of him because he's a bigot, and then like, yeah, you got that social issue, and good job guys. But I fucking love this movie, and I've seen it a million times, and every time I watch it I hope it fucking ends different so that Mark Zuckerberg piece of shit doesn't win. But of course, yeah. I just ruined the movie Circle. You should chuck on at the bottom of this podcast.
I'm sure it has a bunch of increasingly less sophisticated sequels by now that you can keep unspoiled for the listeners.
Oh, Circle 2, Hyper Circle, yeah. Circles 0, all of them, I'm sure. But like, this is the kind of media that fascinates me, and like, for some fucking stupid weird reason, fascinates a lot of the other particularly gay dudes that I know, and I've never come to an explanation for it. But you can take it to the bank, this is fact, and I believe this from the bottom of my...
Okay, if anyone has a good answer for that, then answers on a postcard, I guess. Write in, let us know. So we will leave you there with that mystery for part one, and I hope to see you back here for part two.